Well, good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, the Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Sherry K.B., and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Friday, January 3rd, 2020, and this is our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're at Chapter 6, page 80, in Into Action, starting with the third paragraph, beginning with, "He felt he had done, a wrong," and we'll be reading this one paragraph only, ending in statement exonerated his rival. We'll be commenting, We'll be commenting on this one paragraph only. Today's readers are Mariana D. for the 12 Steps, Jerry L. for the 12 Traditions, and readers of our text are Pam M., Jordan L., and Julie E. B. Our newcomer greeter today is Kaylee R. and Reggie O. for our announcements, and Lynn S. is recording us. Thank you, Lynn S. The share ID for yesterday, Thursday, January 2nd, 2020, our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 13,916. That's 13916. And the share ID for this morning's Friday, January 3rd, 2020, our 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 13,918. That's 13918. OA Preamble. Our Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Mariana D. to read our 12 steps of OA. Mariana, good morning. Star 1 to unmute, please. Mariana?
Hi. Yes. This is Mariana D. from Oregon. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Well, thank you, Mariana D., for your service this morning, and our prayers go with you and your husband.
Yeah.
And Jerry L., you're up to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Jerry L.
Good morning. This is Jerry L. from Louisiana. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself. In our group conscience, our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, and may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality. Thank you for letting me serve, and I pass.
And thank you, Jerry L., for your service this morning. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted, and that goes for your personal mute button. Please don't use that. Please use just star 1 to mute and unmute. That way we have a nice, quiet meeting. Thank you. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 80, and we're in paragraph 3, beginning with, he felt that he had done a wrong. We're going to read through that one paragraph only, ending in statement exonerating his rival. And would Pam M. please begin reading? Pam, good morning.
Yes, good morning, everyone. This is Pam M. in upstate New York. Happy New Year. So, he felt that he had done a wrong he could not possibly make right. If he opened that old affair, he was afraid it would destroy the reputation of his partner, disgrace his family, and take away his means of livelihood. What right had he to involve those dependent upon him? How could he possibly make a public statement exonerating his rival? Well, I made a wrong that I believed I could not make right. And many of you heard me crying on the lines talking about this. With Larry K and Dawn B with their special editions. You know, I hurt my sister-in-law deeply. She was teaching at my yoga studio, and she wasn't following my script. I kicked her out of the studio, told her she couldn't teach there anymore. And then I had her addicted child come live with me. I was trying to get him recovered. And then I kicked him out when I found out that he was still using, and I blamed her for his use. And I said some really terrible things to both of them. Well, he died. I was so selfish that I thought, oh my God, now she'll never forgive me. You know, not only did I lose my nephew, but now I'll never be forgiven. So I had to make amends and live out my amends through humility. I had to make two amends to her. The first one went awry. I was still in the food. And I had to really wait for her to be ready to hear my second one. And, you know, only those of us, only the people that were closest to us really knew what happened between us. Still, people must have suspected because all of a sudden she just wasn't on the schedule. So how do I help her recover from the embarrassment that and revive her place in my life and at my studio? That was my question. So I didn't stand up in front of a crowd and say something. I invited her band to come play at my studio several times. She actually made the grand reopening. We had to relocate recently. I sing her songs. I praise her on stage every time I'm introduce her band, and every time I speak of her. When I speak about her to other people that do know what has happened, I always express my sorrow and that I did something wrong. And if people ask for specifics, I always say I would rather not repeat what I have said or done. Because, you know, people want to talk. And well, I wrote a review of her online, and I asked her to come back, and she's on my brochures. So I'm learning that making an amends has helped me to join the human race. And I can be one of you instead of being, quote, unquote, better than you through this program. So I'm so happy to fit in. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Pam M., for getting us started this morning. So just reminding everybody, we're on page 80, paragraph, third paragraph, beginning with he felt that he had done a wrong, and ending, we're going to read that one paragraph, ending in statement exonerating his rival. Who would like to share this morning?
Brandy M.
Stacey J.
I heard a soft voice after Brandy M.
Stacey J.
Stacey J. Okay. Got you, Stacey. Who would like
Kathleen
to go next?
O.
Kathleen O. All right. Keep going. We've got three more slots. Jump in. The water is warm.
Mariana D.
Anna D.
Julie okay. E.B.
Julie E.B. One more. Come on in. Jump on in.
Reggio.
Reggio. All right. We got a nice lineup this morning, folks. We have Brandy M., Stacey J., Kathleen O., Mariana D., Julie E.B., and Reggio. Brandy M., please go ahead, please, and you'll be followed by Stacey J. Good morning, Brandy.
Good morning. It's Brandy M., recovered compulsive overeater in Canada. I like this, actually. I spent a lot of time not wanting to make a certain amends and holding on to this amends. And this last time that food beat me so badly, I knew I needed to look at it. And it was a large financial amends. And because I'm selfish, self-centered, I didn't want to have to, you know, change my lifestyle or do anything drastic to make this right. And so I prayed a lot about it. And what came to me is that, you know, if I don't do this, I'm going to continue to go back to the food because I have to make my wrongs right. And being in the food was much harder than this amends would have been. And so in talking to fellows, what I learned is that I don't have to put my family at risk to do this amends. As long as I'm willing to go to any lengths to make this amends, that's all that counts, that, you know, I can do this over a lifetime, because it's a big financial amends. And so I took the next right action and started doing what I needed to do to clear up my side and paying back this money. And, you know, I'm doing a monthly payment plan to back to this organization that I've been ripping off for a long time in my disease. And, you know, and today I want to be a woman of integrity in recovery. And I don't want to be, you know, hiding from certain agencies so that, you know, I don't get caught. I want to be honest and free of that. And so, and it's not, it wasn't as bad as I anticipated it to be. And, you know, when I was in my disease, that was like so daunting. And today, you know, being a woman in recovery, I just want to make things right. And I want to be honest and free. And, you know, it comes down to me for how free do I want to be? And I do want to be free. And so I'm so grateful for this program and so grateful that, you know, God beat me once again with that gift of desperation where I was willing to go to any lengths. And this is like my last amends that's, you know, of any sort of substantiation that I need to do. So I'm super grateful. Thanks.
Brandy M. Stacy J., you're up, followed by Kathleen O. Good morning, Stacy J.
Good morning. This is Stacy J. from Toronto, Canada. Two Canadians in a row. This paragraph strikes me in a number of ways. I've been recovered after years of relapse. I've been recovered for about 110 days, and I did my step four quickly, as I was instructed to do, about 2 months in, or maybe a month and a half into my recovery. And one of the things that came up for me that sort of showed up in a number of ways is that when someone had wronged me, I took it as a reason to discredit that person and gossip about them. And so one of the, I didn't have this kind of a thing where I had, you know, ruined someone financially, but I had a landlord at my office where I had to move out because it turned out to be an unsuitable circumstance. And I felt like that landlord's lack of transparency about the circumstances there made him kind of like a bad person. I'm all in the right, he's all in the wrong, and I just would gossip about him at any opportunity that anyone would listen. And so in doing my my step four, it became clear to me that I no longer have the luxury of discrediting people who have wronged me. And also, you know, thanks to the resentment prayer, it's like my thinking shifted that here's a guy with a family who's trying to make a living for himself and his family. And just like I'm trying to make a living. So it's not even clear to me that anything he did is inherently wrong. It just stepped on my toes. You know what I mean? It inconvenienced me and it cost me some money, but it's not the end of the world. And if I want to be right with my higher power, I can't discredit people just in order to feel superior or for any reason, really. But like, that's kind of what it was, is like, look how bad they are. I'm such a victim. It's just not, I don't feel it's who my higher power wants me to be. And that behavior became objectionable to me through my fourth step review and sharing it with my sponsor. This paragraph reminds me of this because this person has dependence. And what right do I have to discredit someone with dependence also, you know? So it's not exactly what it says here, but there's a lot here that resonates for me in terms of how I want to be in this world. And I'm not interested in playing the victim and that sort of self-righteous anger, because it puts me back in the food, which I will do anything to avoid. So that's all I have to share. I pass.
You, Stacy J. Kathleen O., you're up, followed by Mariana D. Good morning, Kathleen O.
Good morning, Sherry KB. This is Kathleen O., recovered in Northern California, and good to be on the line with everyone this morning. So, you know, being an addiction goes hand in hand with selfish and self-seeking behaviors, and our goal is to get abstinent. And I wanted to put down the food and the crazy behavior around food. So the steps were crucial, and step 8 helped me recognize how my behavior and addiction had harmed others, and step 9 is seeking to repair that damage that I had caused. So I really needed to go from being self-centered to God-centered, and Amends are not to make us feel better, although they frequently do make us feel better, but the main purpose is to open ourselves up to having a spiritual experience. And we open our hearts to our higher power and we allow that power in. So just like the man in this paragraph, I had many amends where I felt I had done a wrong I couldn't possibly make right. And this man being worried he would disgrace his family and take away his means of livelihood, and he says, how can I possibly do this? And, you know, I kind of see this as an example of the difference between an apology and an amends. An apology would have been him telling his business rival, I'm sorry I lied about, you know, receiving the money and destroying your reputation, which would basically just be words. And a sincere apology is crucial, but it's not enough to undo the harms we may have caused. So an amends would be taking action and demonstrating one's intention of changing their behavior. And, you know, it's really about restoring goodwill. So the last line of this paragraph, how could he possibly make a public statement exonerating his rival? And he actually does it. You know, he makes a public statement after a sermon before everyone in church, which is jumping ahead to the next paragraph. So I don't have a personal example of having to make a public amends, but I had the same question with some of my amends. How can I possibly do this? So I love the examples in this book because we can read and, you know, think the same. You know, I can't possibly make this amends. And then we read that others did it in these examples. And especially we hear so many examples on the line of fellows actually making these types of amends. So it took an enormous amount of courage for this man, and it takes courage for the examples I hear shared on the line. You know, amends takes a healthy dose of courage. So I found when I had the courage, it took me out of guilt and shame. And being in shame is what fed my addiction. So if I was unwilling to repair relationships, you know, there was a good chance I'd repeat the behavior and trigger a relapse. So making amends is medicine for the soul. There's so much freedom. And when we clean up our side of the street, I find, for me, it's a lot easier to keep it clean. And I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen O. And let's see, we have Mariana D. followed by Julie E. B. Mariana?
Good morning. Wow, I was just taking in these shares that are so amazing and so true. So when I think of amends, I think of peace. And that's something that, like, there's no price tag on that. And I've been abstinent, and I'm doing air quotes as we speak. I've been abstinent in the sense of having the food down, but not having the peace in my heart. And, you know, I've been abstinent out shopping and looking for other things to fill voids or to press down things that need to be looked at. And abstinence, of course, starts with the food, because if I don't have that peace, if I'm in the food, then that kind of just, it's like a whirling dervish going around my head, and I'm not even in a place where I can think of amends or how I need to do that. So, yeah, abstinence is first. And then when you're making those amends, what I'm seeing is like a...
Right there.
You know, I'm trying to explain it. It's a, I like the term shared humanity. It's like you can see your faults, but not in a way where you're beating yourself up. You can you can lovingly look at what you did and what you need to do to right that. And then when things happen to you, and you can also have that piece of like, okay, I get it. You know, like, not be so hard on people or judgy of people because you see your own faults as well. And that's pretty cool. So for me, amends, it's a beautiful thing. Doing it with a sponsor, you're not alone. You're not going down this road alone. You have someone you're talking to before you do it, so you're supported, like we always are in this program with our fellows. But so having that, like, someone holding your hand while you're doing it and helping you, because you know, that term, you know, I can't see the picture when I'm in the frame, you know, talking through an amends with your sponsor before you do it, or other fellows, and getting their advice kind of puts you in a way of you're going into that very present you're not going in fumbling and just saying words or oversharing or you know, making it messy. You're going in with a clear intention, and you're going in open to whatever happens. And it, you know, it might not go the way you think. And guess what? That's okay, because you can talk to your fellows and your sponsor, and you can have peace after it. And then the living amends, we're always working. Nobody's arrived, right? So we're not like, hey, you know, I've been in this program so many years and I got it now. There's a humility there, and that humility is beautiful. And I think the kindness to ourselves, is that time? I'm sorry, did you say time?
Yes, I did.
Okay, thank you. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Mariana D. And Julie E.B., you're up, followed by Reggie O. And before we hear from Reggie O., once Julie E.B. shares, we're going to let you know again where we're at on page 80, paragraph 3. Good morning, Julie E.B. Helicopter, Julie E.B.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered today in Colorado Springs, Colorado, sunny and 9 degrees, but a beautiful day in God's creation. I just want to say that I really have appreciated the shares this morning and the courage of people to identify in. For me, that's the most important part. You know, I've been listening the last couple days because of some scheduling things, and just hearing some people say, well, I've never done anything like that. And today you hear the power of a meeting where you just start with, oh, yeah, I see a way I've done that. Maybe not the exact thing, but for me, have I ever destroyed anyone's reputation? Absolutely. Every time I've gossiped, every time I've spoken about someone at work or concerned voice about another parent or a teacher or someone that I work with, the one that weighs most heavily on my mind that I keep working on today is my own husband. You know, I undercut and destroyed his reputation at times with my children because of my own bitterness. And there's my living amends. I've made amends. And it's been a 3-year process of 10, 11, 12, you know, close to a 3-year process of rebuilding that relationship. And while the financial amends are one thing, rebuilding my husband's reputation today, this vacation I got to see in a new way, a living amends. As I just went upstairs and allowed my husband and kids to play D&D, and I wasn't a part of it. And I came down a couple times. I had some 10 steps about feeling sulky and left out of it. And I finally saw God's handiwork, that I'm not the center of the family anymore, that I'm not the center at work anymore of gossip or whatever, or thinking I know what's best, that I take myself out of those places where I got ease and comfort and a sense of self-esteem, not from my higher power. Yesterday at work, my boss, who's leaving last week, said, Julie, the thing I'm happiest about with you is you no longer need to be right or wrong in these relationships you used to struggle with. You no longer are looking for approval. I sense that you really dig down deep and look for who you are from God. That's what my boss said to me. And I give thanks to this program and every one of you for that. So I'm just going to keep working it because I'm not there yet. I've just begun. Thanks for letting me share. And I pass.
And thank you, Julie B. So before we hear from Reggie O., we're going to be on page 80, paragraph 3. So after Reggie shares, we'll take 6 more. All right, Reggie. Good morning. Star one to unmute, Reggio.
Good morning. Yes, I'm here. A little slow on getting to the unmute this morning, but this is Reggio, very gratefully recovered in the Los Angeles area. And boy, and yeah, thank everybody for all your shares today and throughout this ninth step, the courage and just amazing recovery that I hear is it's really just so inspiring all the time and helpful. When I look at this paragraph, I was first looked at the last sentence, how could he possibly make a public statement exonerating his rival? And I have a note here to the outside of this. It says, because it was the right thing to do. So there's definitely a rightness of action here, and that is to make some kind of amends. But he has all of these, you know, he has Did he have a right to involve, you know, his wife and others who might have been dependent upon him, or to destroy the reputation of his business partner? So it wasn't as clear cut as simply making a public statement. But it was the right thing to do, and he did go in this, I assume, and reading the rest of it, he went into this with a higher power, and he talked to the people that were involved that could possibly be harmed if he made a public statement. So he was ready, and he was ready with his God, and it was only then, you know, that the rest we'll read later. But it was the right thing to do, and he had to find a way in which he would do no harm to right this wrong. Boy, you know, and it's really a beautiful thing. And I was thinking about I shared the other day about the big amends I made at an organization that I used to work with. And I was kind of wondering if there were further amends I would make, you know, needed to make after some of the conversation on this line. And there was someone who was worked for me in the department and was being quite successful rounding up outside people to be in the enterprise that we were, but was doing it illegally, not following the guidelines of this organization that we were under the auspices of. And I didn't know what to do. I was furious. He was being quite successful, and it was causing a lot, you know, it was creating a lot of good opinion and for our department. But the other thing was, you know, it reminds me, but I never did anything about it, and I still realize that I held on to the resentment of that man by what someone was sharing, by all of the sharing this week, and it was the reason that I didn't do a lot of things. But boy, I didn't do anything. I didn't do my part as an administrator. And what this has helped me to learn is more going backwards a little bit. All that I've been hearing is almost every significant amends that I've needed to make has been based on the fact that I got the ball rolling, and I got the ball rolling by not being able to speak up and share the truth in a kind and considerate and understanding way, and to see how I could work with another human being to right whatever was going on in the situation. So it's been a big learning, and I couldn't then have had a conversation with that man in question, but I could today. And he's still there and has made quite a name for himself and has created a lot of success. And it's a resentment that I need to let go of and, you know, think about what the amends that, you know, there might be yet for me to make. So thanks for being there, everybody, and for all the, you know, just all the great recovery and shares. I pass.
Thank you, Reggio. And so now we'll take some more names. We're on paragraph 3 on page 80. Who would like to share this morning?
Leah S. Gary S.
Did you
Donna
say Gary
D.
F?
Charles H.
Hold on there, Charles. I got you. I heard a Jerry. I don't know if that was the F as in Frank.
Leah S.
Terry
I heard
F.
you, Leah S. I'm sorry. You said Terry F?
S as in Sam.
Right, but Terry or Jerry?
Terry for Teresa.
Thank you. All right, so far I have Leah S., Terry S., Charles H. Who else would like to
Darian K.
Darian K.
Kaylee R.
Kaylee, gotcha.
Donna B.
Donna B., all right. We've got our lineup here. All right, Leah S., Terry S., Charles H., Darian K., Kaylee R., Donna B. Leah S., go ahead, followed by Terry S. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning, everyone, and Happy New Year to everyone. My God, I have to say something before I start my pitch. These past few days, this week actually, My I can't recommend which meeting is better than the other. I've learned so much, and I have grown so much through all of you. Thank you very much. So what occurred to me is that I started making my amends actually when I came into program, which is very ironic. And the amends that I made is to myself, because I no longer eat the way I have been eating. So whether it started out as a diet, quote-unquote diet, It continued, and it's my behaviors that have started to shift and change, and my outlook, how it has started to change. So the amends that I'm making, first and foremost to myself, is by my behaviors that are becoming different. I definitely have a different perspective of everything that has been going on and within my resentments, and I have more compassion and empathy towards the other. So I just want to touch upon an amends that is harmful if you do that, but my behavior is not harmful if I change that. In other words, let's say I did something that was really, really wrong, and people were affected, but it would be more harmful if I would publicly do that or even approach by doing that. By understanding that, I still felt the need where I needed to be clean. And this is morality. Actually, it came in. That word came in as I continue to do that. So that's the conscience of me. But that's what I want to bring up. My behavior changed. My behavior and my entire outlook did change. So that made a significant effect eventually. And those were my amends. And thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Leah S. Terry S., you're followed by Charles H. Good morning, Terry S.
Good morning. This is Terry S. in Bend, Oregon. And it's been interesting because I actually find very little to relate to in this story. The amends process, yes, but that amount of drastic damage, I've not done. I've not experienced that. But I destroy people's reputations in my hypercritical head. I frequently don't say anything, but in my own mind, I am cutting people down. I'm judgmental. It is a constant process for me and also myself. And so what I've learned through the amends process is to really pray that my higher power removes that judge in my head and fills my heart with love and compassion for other people. Because everybody is struggling in life. I don't know what their circumstances are. And that's not my job. It's not my job to be so judgmental. And so this amends process has just been amazing for me. And I've been listening to people's stories for the last week as we've been reading each paragraph. And I remember the amends I had to make, probably the hardest were to my parents, to apologize for my behaviors. And it was very meaningful, and we have a nice relationship now. It's not, it's fine. They're not really able to go much deeper than where they're at, and I totally accept that. But it's the decreasing judgment in my own head that is the triumph for me with step 9. Much more accepting. I say the acceptance prayer a lot, and the resentment prayer and the fear prayer, because those are the things that are driving my judgment. And I'm much kinder to myself in my head, and I'm much kinder to other people in my head. And that's just a miracle of this program. So I don't have the dramatic stories of, some of the amends like other people do, but the drama is happening within, and I'm just so grateful that as I walk this spiritual path and I'm open and I'm learning, it is changing my reaction to life, and I am learning to live on life's terms.
Time.
Thank you very much, and I'm really glad to be here, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Terry S. So we have about 10 minutes left, so I'm going to ask everybody to please take 2 minutes each, and if it kind of runs over a little bit, it's okay, but let's take 2 minutes each, that way we get everybody in. Charles H., you're up, followed by Darian K. Good morning, Charles.
Thanks. Good morning. I'm not going to waste time saying my name. You already said it. So exoneration, that's a powerful word. To exonerate somebody is to release them from, duty or obligation, release them from fault, release them from wrongdoing. And truth be told, you may not be able to identify with this particular case, but if you're a human being and you're breathing, you got people on trial that need to be exonerated. I got people on trial every single day that need to be exonerated. And they use it in the text as like they're using it in the example of a courtroom or a prosecution. We prosecute people in our mind every single day. I don't care how recovered you want to be, how recovered you talk about being. If you got a mind, a human mind, people need to be exonerated from our human mind, our humanness, our carnal mind, right? And the more we do this, the better it gets, and the more we realize other people can be exonerated. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Quick, Charles H., thank you. Darian, you're up, followed by Kaylee R. Good morning, Darian.
Good morning. This is Darian K. from the Berkshires, Massachusetts. Grateful to be here on the line with all of you. I was just thinking a lot about this, and, part of me wants to not identify because I can't, because it's to me, I'm black and white, so I'm like, I'm not that guy that did all those things, right? And then I have to identify in and see the gray area, which is really hard for me. this stuff makes sense to me. It really does. And I recently actually did an amends with my ex-husband, who, strangely enough, it's actually not even set in stone that we're exes yet, but, we've been separated for 20 years. And so it seems like a really long time, and people are like, what are you doing? But I knew in my heart, and I've been in program a long time, that things were not in the right place for me to make a decision. Very fragile, sick human being he is, and alcoholic, and just mental illness, all that kind of jazz. And so the timing was not right. And so when I read this paragraph, I saw the word foolish, and I saw the word hasty. And I thought, yeah, that's maybe what it was. And you know what? If I had done it sooner, I would have gotten some pretty good money out of it. But there probably would have been a very messy situation. And you know what? I am so glad I waited. And I sat down with this person face to face, and we talked, and it was really wonderful. And he's in a program of recovery now, and he understood even more what I was doing. And the little ribbon, the little bow to wrap the present was, that I felt in my heart to send him a message during Christmas time, that I'll wrap it up, that, that I enjoyed a lot of Christmases with his family, and that the memories were, very wonderful for me. And, he sent me back little prayer hands, like, wow, that's what the heart does. The heart softens, and the heart definitely becomes much better and much brighter. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
We can't hear you, Sherry.
I'm sitting here. Kaylee R., go ahead.
Okay.
We've got 2.5 minutes each, Kaylee and Donna B. Go ahead, Kaylee R., thank you.
Hi, it's Kaylee. I recovered in California. I just wanted to share a quick amends that I made last year. The first couple times I worked through the steps, I was not willing to make this amends to my grandfather. It was the one that was like, if put it off until I get all the others done, and then I'll do it. And then I would relapse, and so I wouldn't do it. And this past time that I worked the steps, I was finally willing to make this amends to him. And I did last Christmas, and he told me it was the best Christmas present he'd ever received. And then last August, he was not doing well. His cancer came back, and I got to talk to him the day before he passed away. And my dad was there with him and said he lit up when he spoke to me or when I called. And I would have never called had I not made that amends. I don't know that I would have talked to him again. And so I'm really grateful for this program and for my willingness and for my higher power to be able to do that and have that closure and be able to speak to him and hopefully made it a little bit easier for him to go. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Kaylee R. Donna B., go ahead. You're up. You're our last one to share this morning. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning. This is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic from Denver, Colorado, calling in from Vero Beach, Florida this morning. The question, what right does he have to harm the people dependent upon him? And that's an interesting question to me in the context of amends. I have a 12-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son that are dependent on me. And everything I choose to do has the possibility to cause them harm or to alleviate the potential for additional harm. So when I ask myself about amends, it's not so much do I have the right to hurt them by making the amends, but do I have the right to possibly hurt them by not making the amends? Living in the disease of compulsive overeating and bulimia makes it absolutely impossible for me to be present for my children and my family. And to follow through on the amends that I've been called to make ensures my continued recovery and abstinence. So I am willing to go to any lengths to remain abstinent, and I would rather risk hurting my children by following through on an amends than risk destroying my life and my family and possibly ending my life by not following through on my amends. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Donna B. And it looks like, you know what, I think we're going to leave some room for newcomers to be able to call in, so we're going to stop the meeting now. And I just want to thank everybody. What great shares this morning we had. Thank you, everyone. So let's take the time to thank Team Friday. That's Mariana D., Jerry L., Jordan L., Julie B., Pam M., Kaylee R., and Reggie O., and Lynn S. All right. So let's go ahead and read page 164. Julie E.B. is going to read that for us today, followed with, please read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only and keep you until then. Julie, star 1 to unmute, please. Julie E.B.?
Yeah, hi. This is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered today in Colorado Springs. Let me get it big enough here. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with God is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you.